Once more into the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure.
I don't know about this exciting
thing. It is exciting.
It's exciting for us.
Neither one of us know what the heck we're going to be saying for the next 2 hours, and we could just completely foul things up.
Well, the thing is, nobody else knows what we're going to be saying either, and they're falling asleep.
Not yet.
Not yet.
They did that last night.
You hopefully. Know, they, hopefully.
This is the show. It's not a show. It's actually. This
it's
is
more
the
like a tell.
Tell. Well, a tell is something you do in the middle of a game of poker.
No, that was actually just me picking my nose.
Oh, okay.
That's all that was.
Okay. So this is the program where if you have insomnia, we will work at curing it. So it's kind of a medical talk program, right?
Yeah, yeah. And it's not intended to treat, cure, or prevent any disease, except that if you listen to it for very long, you may get your insomnia cure.
Right. And I don't know.
Because we're
like
exciting.
That. Yes. Well, anyway, the Personal Wealth Coach is purely not by coincidence both a radio program, which you've probably figured out if you're listening at this point, and if you're not listening, you don't know, so
yeah,
it doesn't make
matter.
Any difference. And the other thing that it is the name of an investment advisory firm in Salado, Texas, that manages investment portfolios for mostly human beings, but occasionally non-human beings.
Yes. Those with foundation issues or
and is registered,
trust problems or, you know.
And is registered with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission, which is, by the way, to inform you of to whom you should make complaints if you think we are being untoward. That could be our word of the day, untoward. Okay, anyway.
Would that be distoward if you're
no,
untoward?
No, it's untoward. It's strictly untoward. And obviously being toward is good and being untoward is bad, right?
Right.
Okay.
Well, today is June 28th.
Are you sure?
2014. As I say it, I am sure. However, if you're listening in Australia,
then it's already tomorrow.
Yeah. So there may be, I can be absolutely sure that what I'm saying is right and be right as well as be wrong.
Well, in Japan and China, it's also tomorrow.
Yes.
So
it is.
Yes, there's something, there's a time warp in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. Anyway, the telephone numbers, we deal with investment stuff, which is a technical term that's used in economics. And we deal with economics and the economy of the United States and to a lesser extent of the world and with investment and portfolios and things of that ilk.
Sometimes that means we deal with geopolitics, but we try to keep out of the overly partisan stuff.
Actually, I like geopolitics because geography changes so slowly that you can really spend a lot of time to figure out what is overriding what.
While the geography does change slowly, the cartography seems to be speeding up and it's changing lately.
Well, that's because cars are faster than geos.
Yeah, carts are a lot faster than geos, yeah.
So, anyway, the telephone number's in here, presuming that where you are and where we are is the same date, Saturday, June 28th. 773-1400 is the number to call if you have any questions or comments from East Bell County. Otherwise,
1-866-597-1400 anywhere else within the sounds of our voices.
Whoa, you included me in it that time.
Well, I usually do. You're an we're an inclusive pair.
That
here.
Makes sense.
It's kind of a.
So, we want to talk about what happened.
All right. Well, today is June 28th. We've just mentioned that it's
That's
an important
you,
day.
You have some degree of grasp
it's an
on the obvious.
Day. Yeah. Do you know what happened 100 years ago today?
Yes, I do. As a matter of fact, it wasn't here.
Well, we had another June 28th that happened exactly 100 years ago,
and there was a significant event occurred on that date.
Oh, well, that too.
But it didn't occur here. It occurred. It was in Sarajevo, wasn't it?
Yes, in Bosnia. That is correct. Franz Ferdinand was shot.
Because of a traffic jam.
Yes. Well, because of a traffic jam and an incompetent assassin that couldn't find him before, who happened to want some snacks at a cafe.
Mm-hmm.
And then a traffic jam.
I think he was trying to get a cup of coffee.
Yeah, cafe at the cafe.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I think it's important because since that point, 100 years ago, plus...
No, people may not know what the significance of Archduke Ferdinand's assassination
was. You're right. They may not, and we're not going to tell them. We'll tell them. We will tell them.
It was an early case of road rage.
Yes. The Archduke in question is the reason why World War I started. Because there were lots of people that had, or lots of countries that had alliances with other lots of countries, and it led to large countries going to war with other large countries over the actions of very small countries. There you go.
Okay, he's explained it in great detail.
That was the shortened version of the beginning of World War I.
There's another explanation that I once read. I read a very long book on it, and I could summarize it by saying that armies could move faster than diplomats.
Right. The diplomats would show up, and the army had already been there and fought a battle. So that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
We're now at a place where public opinion moves a lot faster than the diplomats, and I'm bringing up this 100-year thing not just because it's a nice round number of 100 years, but also because since that point, since the end of World War I, we've had a system of fairly stable boundaries of countries across the world.
Well, there was this little event that occurred in the late 1930s.
Right.
In early 1940s, well, it kind of moved some boundaries around.
Well, not really. This is the point that I'm trying to bring up. When we talk about the German invasions or the expansion of the Soviet Union, the borders didn't shift. There's only one time that happened, and that was, well, one major time, and that was when we split Germany.
Well, we split Germany, and we gave part of what was previously Germany to Poland.
Right.
And part of it to France, and basically...
So there was a treaty where all of this is resettled. What we're seeing right now, on the other hand, is without a great action of lots of countries coming together and great decisions being made in unison, we're having boundaries shift and move and melt into each other. What's happening in Syria and Libya and Iraq is basically the changing of boundaries. What's happened in Crimea is a restatement of boundaries. But it's a hearkening back to a time before World War I when borders could move easily. Generally speaking, I mean, when Germany invaded France, the French did not decide that they only conquered part of France. When Russia invaded the different countries that they invaded in the different ways that they invaded, it was a whole country that moved, not pieces of them.
Mm. And
that's not the case anymore. There's been a change in the geopolitical attitude. And this is something I've actually been studying this. I haven't seen anybody write anything on it. And I've come to the conclusion on why it's happened now when it was so stable for so long.
I am sitting on the edge of my seat waiting.
You will love this. It started happening because it happened. Sudan...
Wait a minute.
...decided to change things. So their Sudan's neighbors go, oh, you can do that? And now it's happening. It's a spreading effect that's happened all over
the
region.
If you look at Yugoslavia...
Right.
...which doesn't exist anymore...
Correct.
And realize that the world community, led by the United States of America, decided that Yugoslavia needed to be four countries.
Right. Which is what's really happening in Libya, Syria,
and
Iraq.
Basically, we decided, and we supported in the United Nations, and the Europeans went along with it, that Montenegro, Bosnia...
Serbia
and
Croatia.
Croatia, but there's
Bosnia
a
Herzegovina.
Yeah.
It's one word. Yes.
Yeah, when the names get that long, you know you're having a Balkans problem.
Yeah, I'm balking at that problem, actually.
And to put this in a little bit of, may I put this in a little perspective?
You can put it in a large perspective if you'd like.
The Balkan states, and that's what they're called, where World War I started over these small countries in disputes over who owned what under what circumstances, came into existence with the fall with the collapsing, the slow collapsing of this thing called the Ottoman Empire.
That's the place where they make the stools that you put your feet on, right?
What's that?
The Ottomans?
It could be. I've not been able to find them lately.
I've got an Ottoman, and I've decided that I own it, and it is part of my empire now.
Okay.
I've called it my Ottoman Empire. I rest my feet upon it.
The remnants of the Ottoman Empire are, in effect, Turkey, for those of you who don't track the Ottoman Empire,
right.
which is almost everybody. And the Ottoman Empire literally owned the Middle East and well up into Europe in the Balkans. And as it began to collapse internally and pieces of it began to split off.
And that finalized during World War I.
Right. And it just gradually fell apart. And as it did, individual ethnic and non-ethnic groups where the Europeans got together and drew arbitrary lines and everybody kind of agreed on some arbitrary lines and then they would agree on some other arbitrary lines.
They weren't arbitrary. They were decided with a great deal of thought and a lot of wine.
So they were winatory
lines. Winatory lines, yes.
So what happened was you had these ethnic groups who weren't particularly happy with where the lines were drawn after the Ottoman Empire fell. And interestingly, the European powers had aligned with certain of the ethnic groups. I know that sounds really strange and very esoteric and out there.
What's happening right now, actually.
But yeah, that's the point. The Soviet Union... The fall of the Soviet Union was not at all unlike the fall of the Ottoman Empire.
Correct.
And what's going on in Iraq, Iraq's borders were drawn as a result of the fall of the, you know, some other things happened in the middle of that, but basically as a result of the fall of the Ottoman Empire and the British occupations and colonies. But Iraq really was an irrational choice of borders. They drew some other borders, and what was left in the middle was Iraq. And it's starting to fall apart, and it's happening in lots of other places around the world. It's happening in the Balkans. The Russians are claiming ethnic rights for people who speak their language, who are ethnically Russians. The parallels between what happened 100 years ago and what's going on in the part of the world that is generally, we used to call it the Far East and the Middle East, and those are no longer terms that are used, at least in diplomacy. We now call it West Asia and Southwest Asia and Southeastern Europe.
We call it that. When I was using those terms the other day in a group of people, some of whom are involved in the diplomatic community, they were confused. And they said,
really?
Why aren't you calling it the Middle East? And I said, well, how do you find the Middle East on the map? The Middle East of what? If you call it Southwest Asia or Northeast Africa, at least you know where you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Middle East was actually from Great Britain.
Right. And so somewhere over there, before you get to the Far East, you've got this Middle East area.
Right.
And if you come a little bit closer to us, then you're still in the West.
Well, the official United States position is, for example, that's not the Middle East, that's Southwest Asia.
Correct. And that's I believe that's the easiest way of recognizing where you're talking about so that you don't think that you're have been in the Midwest, which is in a different continent than the Mideast.
That's true. And I have been, I have been in the Far East on a couple of occasions in Maine.
Right.
Which is about as far east as I would care to go.
And when you consider that
Florida.
The Far East to us is actually west, it gets very confusing. So all of this, we're just establishing the vocabulary being used here.
So the fascinating thing is that we have this, as Mark Twain put it, habit of rhyming our histories.
Yes, history does not repeat itself,
but
it rhymes.
Right. And so what we're seeing going on in the world right now is...
A very clear
truly
rhyme.
A fascinating repeat or rhyme with what happened 100 years ago. And it's not just an incident of history back then. It's entirely possible, given the current circumstances that are going on in the world, we could repeat World War I. And I think that people would say that's amazing, that's odd, that's unlikely, that is nobody
really
could imagine that happening.
Well, let me give an example of how it might happen. This last week... the Ukraine that is left of the country of Ukraine that mm-hmm. is left. It used to be slightly larger than it is, but that portion that is left, that is Ukraine, signed an agreement with the European Union.
Right. This is a trade agreement.
The trade agreement. Now, this is the same agreement that was in effort to be signed when Putin stepped in and convinced the former president that he didn't need to sign that. He needed
Yurashenko, I think his
yes.
name was.
Yes. Yurashenko, Yurashinking my
Which
country.
Sounds like a tremendous insult. Yurashenko.
I am not. Yes. So he
left town after
right.
that.
Right. So Putin was not happy with the concept of it being signed. He said, you will come and sign my trade agreement, not their trade agreement. It will be much more lucrative because we include Uzbekistan in ours. And so Yushchenko said, oh, all right, then I will do that, and you will give me lots of money.
It's Yurashenko, not Yushchenko.
Yurashenko?
Yeah, Yurashenko.
Okay.
It's a complete sentence. Oh. Yurashenko.
All right, gotcha. So Putin is also not happy that this agreement has been signed.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, one of his aides was heard to say that the new president of Ukraine, who Putin is saying he will talk with and all this stuff, one of Putin's direct aides called him a Nazi, very clearly said that he was a nationalist socialist and that he was out to kill Russians. So that dialogue is still going on. Now, why is it important? Why are we comparing that to World War I? Because the trade agreement is the preliminary step to joining the European Union. And Ukraine, on the west side, is pretty well surrounded by NATO members. What do we get out of having a NATO member in that part of the world? It's not like if we are invaded by someone that we're expecting to have a great deal of help from Moldova or Romania.
We won't?
What are they going to do?
How about Estonia?
Estonia, come help us. We're being invaded. No, what this is something that the Russians truly do not understand. And I was doing some reading yesterday on the founding, the beginnings of the European Union.
Mm-hmm.
And it started as a coal and steel consortium where they wanted to start sharing assets with each other.
And a consortium.
It was a consortium. It was
as opposed to an anti-sortium.
Right. It was okay. Or pro-sortium.
Right.
Cons, anti, pros, all that good stuff.
Right.
And it was set up in concept by the French foreign minister in, I think it was 1957. He got together with the Germans and said, you know, we really like you and you really like us. And that seems to be the norm throughout most of history. And there's a little pun in the use of the word norm, so that's only very esoteric punning, though.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the norm throughout history, except for when we really dislike each other, when we go to war with each other for no apparent reason, and it happens so often.
But it's a lot of fun.
But it's so much fun. So they decided to start sharing their assets across the borders. They started to say, we want to make war materially impossible because we'll be building each other's war weapons. And it makes it really hard for us to fight each other if we
yes.
do that. So that's the basis of the European Union. It's very similar to what the colonies in the United States did before they were the United States. We said, we don't want to go to war with each other, so let's just set up an entity where each of our states, each of our countries, is trading with each other without
a
problem.
A North American free trade zone?
Sort of, and that's basically
The original NAFTA was 13 countries,
right,
on the east coast in the Far East,
exactly. And as we
the Far East of America,
right. And as we grew in that agreement, we started sharing a common government, the federal government, because each state still technically is its own country. It's its own. That's what state means anywhere else in the world. You say, "I'm from a nation state." Only now, a nation state is Texas, the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we have a head of state. We have a governor. These are things that are important to recognize.
Texas actually has a secretary of state.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And as they should, saying is it is a state.
And his name is not John Kerry,
right,
by the way. Right.
So this thing that's growing in Europe is a device intended to prevent the member states from fighting each other. And Russia has said very clearly that it doesn't want to join. If the purpose of this union, the only purpose of the union at the beginning, was to form an entity that didn't want to fight itself. And Russia says, I don't want to be part of that. It tells you what Russia's motivation is. And it's the same motivation that they've had throughout most of history, which is we want to expand. We want a little piece
well,
of...
But there's a really...
We want a peace in our time. We want peace of Ukraine.
There's a very good reason for that.
What, the expansion?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
They don't have any natural barriers, and as a result, they have been invaded more times, successfully invaded and pretty much overrun more times than any other entity in that part of the world.
Correct.
I mean, the Mongols ran over them. The Chinese ran over them.
Well,
the various European powers have run over them.
I was talking again yesterday with a series of people that are involved in the whole diplomatic world, and they were talking about Tibet, and they were talking about how China has this aggressive stance of invading other countries. And I said, wait a minute, you got to look at the criteria that we're talking about here for Tibet. Tibet was invaded because the Soviets said they wanted it.
Tibet?
So, Tibet.
The Soviets wanted it?
The Soviets wanted it.
I didn't know that.
And it's kind of like the Golan Heights for Israel. The Chinese heard the Soviets beginning their discussion of possibly taking Tibet.
How would they get there?
Well, they at that point had quite a large number of states that reached around close to Tibet. They were talking about a Soviet sponsor state, just like Cuba.
Oh, okay,
in
right.
Tibet. And they were talking about sponsoring people to go in to do it. Well, the Chinese didn't like that. Even if it was only a rumor, that's the reason why they invaded Tibet. The Chinese are not, generally speaking, expansionist. And this is something fascinating here because people that talk about China being the next threat to the United States. I want to point some things out here. China has very strategically and with a lot of deep thought implemented a lot of things to integrate itself with the rest of the world as far as trade goes, as far as international protocol goes. And people say, well, how can you say that when they're putting this oil rig up next to Vietnam? And I will tell you very clearly how I can say that. How did the Russians handle Ukraine moving away from their authority? They invaded. They took a chunk of the country and said, this is the part we wanted anyway. In the past, when China invaded Tibet, how did they do it? Well, it was pretty brutal. They showed up, they took over, they shot a lot of people, they took care of people in the most effective way possible. But the rest of the world says that's not how we do that. So what are they doing in the oceans that they have recently claimed? Are they shooting people? Are they sinking vessels? No. In fact, when the Vietnamese are trying to ram them, they're putting water cannons out and shooting them with water cannons. Now, if you consider that Tibet had no more Chinese right than this oil rig that's being put out by the Chinese, and the way they handled the Tibetans that tried to ram them is to kill them, and the way they're handling the Vietnamese that are doing it is to shoot water at them, you can see that they have become more mild over time. And they're moving further in that direction. They're passing clean air acts. They're passing clean water acts. They're doing the things in a very timely manner. And you've talked about this in the past. They've looked at American economists, and they've looked at history and where America and the other great Western powers, how they developed. So the plan for their industrial revolution included no stops on pollution. No stops on acid rain or any of the other things until a given time, which is now. So they've been scheduled to have their Clean Air Acts come out at this point for about 30 years. And now they're here, and they start passing the acts. Compare that to Russia, compare that to Southwest Asia, compare that to Africa, and you see Russia is moving back in time. As far as the standards of the world, as far as atrocities and so on. Most of Africa is moving back in time because it's never had an incentive to stay. Trade is the incentive. When we pass the agreement that we're in the process of making with the European Union for free trade, that's going to create a great deal of stability in the world. But it's going to cause the people that aren't part of that to be less stable. Anyway, this was a long kind of flowing discussion on the state of the world as opposed to what it was prior to World War One. It is much more stable in certain areas and much less stable in certain other areas. And that gives us some areas to watch and some areas to be comfortable with. And that was my soliloquy. So what else has happened this week?
Wow. I'm impressed.
This is what happens
World
when we
War One
skip
is,
a week.
World War One is potentially cranking up again.
Right.
And for whatever it's worth, we're following right down many of the paths that led us into World War One. I strongly suspect that many people in the State Department, or at least the leader of our State Department in the United States, hasn't read much history lately.
I suspect you're right. I suspect that the actions that he's doing are so similar to the actions that were done 100 years ago inappropriately. It's just...
Well, I guess one of the particularly in light of the fact that we talk about economics and things like that, it's probably important to note that we've had some really impressive increases in virtually every aspect a person could invest in. I said impressive, not huge, but very good. The first half of the year looks excellent. But we've got a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to call and ask for your opinion on what you thought about this. Do you think there'll ever be a one world order, or if it already is in effect? Because, you know, that's going to affect all kinds of matters, financial, everything. And I'll take my answer off the air, and you have a very good day, sir.
Thank you. I can answer that if you don't mind.
I don't know about the word one world order,
but
there's always a new world order.
Well, the one world order is rapidly forming. It's called the United States of America.
Right.
When you consider that, I don't know, order is the right word for it, but when you consider
one time
that
it was Great Britain.
Yeah, the vast majority of financial transactions in the world are done in dollars. The economy of the world moves up and down with
the economy of the United States.
With the economy of the United States. The universal language of diplomacy around the world is English, American English, mind you.
Air traffic control and diplomacy,
right.
Yeah.
Well, will there ever be one world order? I don't know that, certainly in our lifetimes, that we will see nation states give up their sovereignty the way the states of the United States have given up their sovereignty to the federal government. Will there ever be a united world? I think only when we get into space, if we meet some aliens who become hostile.
We need a common threat to do that.
Then we'll unite, but still, the Chinese consider themselves to be the center of the world. The Russians are paranoid. The French, the French are just the French. But
yeah, they also believe they're the center of the world.
We have one world chaotic situation right now. We do agree on certain things, and I think we'll agree on more things. But as far as a apocalyptic one world order, nah.
Not anytime soon.
That's a long, long
In order to get there, let me just give some background here. In order to get there, first, you have to recognize something fairly important. In order for that to happen, the European Union would be involved in it somehow. The European Union doesn't even have a constitution yet.
Right. Great Britain doesn't have a constitution.
Every time they try to write one of the countries involved vetoes it, which means that if one large trade bloc entity doesn't even have an order...
it's
really hard to have a whole world order when you have places like Iraq existing in it and places like Ukraine or places like Bosnia or Burma.
Right. Some of the better thinkers and economic philosophers, for lack of a better term, have suggested that by the end of the 21st century, the United States will be dominant in the world in a manner not unlike the way the Roman Empire was dominant in the world at the height of the Roman Empire.
Which, in effect, could be a new world order.
And you might call it that, but the closest thing that is capable of the socioeconomic entities, and that's a funny term, but it's really hard to figure out what's a state and what's a nation. Of the socioeconomic entities in the world today, there's only one that has the capability of dominating the world, and we aren't interested in doing so. So the chances of it, except for purposes of trade.
Right. I think the people that are really concerned about that whole concept think of the blue-helmeted UN stepping in and taking over everywhere.
That's not
going to happen. The UN gets most of its funding from the United States. The vast majority of its funding comes from the United States.
And any member of the Security Council can stop anything anytime they want to.
Russia can veto, China can veto, France can veto, Germany can veto, the United States can veto, and then there's more. There's these rotating groups that can come in and out and veto just for the fun of it because, hey, why not have Thailand come in and veto?
If we degenerate in the middle of this century, as has happened historically, into a world war, which is not terribly unlikely, in my opinion.
I think it would be more unlikely for it not to happen, considering history.
But I'm not talking about a World War I, which is really pretty localized compared with World War II.
Right.
I'm talking about a sort of a repeat of World War II. If we were to degenerate into something like that around mid-century, then on the backside of that, the United States would probably say it is economically more effective for us to dominate the world than it is to keep having wars. And to give you some idea why I say that, one of the things that people overlook because they don't like to read history too much is that we fought two wars in Europe, and at the end of the second war, which we call World War II, we kept American troops in Germany.
And in Japan.
And folks, this is one of those things that unfortunately the neocons in the George W. Bush administration overlooked when they said we can just go in and fight and get out.
No, we've got to leave people there for stability purposes.
We have a very significant number of American armed forces in Germany and Japan, and have had them there since 1945.
So you think about that just for a moment.
So we're talking about 70 years.
You're just thinking about that for just a moment and say, what are they doing there? They're not invading anybody else. They're just doing some exercises.
They're not dominating the country. But they're just there in case
people
get out of hand.
Right. We're not imposing taxes on Germany or Japan in the process, although there's a new law that possibly does that with America.
Oh, yeah, we're supposed to talk about that.
Yeah, we'll get to that. But that's the way that the United States views the world. If there's a new world order, that's, unless something happens to the United States to completely wipe us off the map, that's the only thing that would be the new world order.
Okay, so we've got to do some commercials, though. And you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach on KTEM. And the telephone numbers you can call after we get done with these important words from KTEM's sponsor. Okay. 773-1400 in East Bell County, or
1-866-597-1400 anywhere else.
And we'll be back. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and Jake McClure. Having trouble talking. Do you suppose I should call 911?
I think that's a normal state of affairs for us.
Oh, okay. And I'm not able to understand you.
I don't understand me either.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cool. Okay. Anyway, we've had a very good first half of the year, presuming as we coast down to the end of June.
Well, we had a pretty nasty first quarter as far as the GDP goes.
Well, and that's one of the things that a lot of people have looked at really, really hard, and we wanted to discuss that.
I only look at it really soft.
It's an interesting, we had an unusual first half so far, in that literally every asset class, every broad asset class out there went up, and that is very unusual. The stock market, utilities were probably the fastest rising thing. Gold has gone up. Bonds have gone up in value. You work your way, commodities are up in value. It's just been a great time to be invested in the first half of the year. However, there are some contraindications that suggest that we want to keep ourselves aware of what's going on. We'll discuss that in a lot more detail in the next hour and a quarter or so. But there's a lot of interesting things going on in the economy. Among them are people who are not aware of where things are in the total economy. And that is a consistent thing that I'm getting from speeches from members of the Federal Reserve and from commentaries from investment managers that have done very, very well over the years, is we're in what's called sort of a Goldilocks position with regards to the markets and even the economy. The announcement that the latest estimate from the Commerce Department, by the way, there's yet another revision coming, that the economy dropped at an annualized rate of 2.9% in the first quarter is...
That seems about right. It's somewhere, I would say, 2.5 to 3.2. Mm-hmm. Somewhere in there, we had a drop, and that had a lot to do with weather.
And it had a lot to do with weather, but that wasn't...
That's a big chunk of
it. This
whole
thing. And we had an unusual event occur in that same first quarter. We had a spike in imports.
Yep.
And a depression in exports. This, again, was at least partially related to weather, but it was just one of those things that happens. But one of the bigger issues, which, by the way, could have accounted for about half of the negative 2.9, was the fact that Obamacare went into effect on January 1st and healthcare spending dropped 1.4%. And that's not an annualized rate, folks.
Yeah, that was...
That is in that one quarter, healthcare spending dropped 1.4%. And there's a ripple effect associated with that that's huge. And when you have all these things happening at the same time, you get a negative. And
there's one more piece.
What's that?
Recalls.
Yes.
General Motors did a big recall. So did Toyota. There were a bunch of big recalls that took place at the same time. That doesn't mean that the trade didn't happen. It means that until the recall is done, the GDP figures it as being a negative. So there are a lot of factors that happen in the middle of this that... This is something we've discussed in the past, something that I think is relatively important. The way we calculate GDP was developed by a man who is, in my opinion, he was a very smart man.
Secretary of Commerce at the time.
I mean, and he has, yeah, I mean, he
was an engineer to boot.
He was an engineer and became president.
Mm-hmm.
But we're still following down that road. We haven't updated.
Well, we have actually some.
Not very much.
Right.
We were using gross national product. Now
well,
it's gross domestic
we've
product.
We've messed around with the edges of it quite a lot.
We still have a massive issue when it comes, and we're talking about someone very specific here.
He's president of the United States, and his initials were HH. That
you're right.
You.
Are we? And how many clues? Nobody's calling in. So it was Herbert Hoover.
Yes. Herbie.
Yeah, Herbert Hoover was a very smart man. I mean, there's a large dam named after him as well.
And a very conservative politician.
Right.
Politically, he was extremely conservative.
When we look at GDP, it's the only thing that we have to really measure the growth or shrinkage of the American economy. But there are so many figures in it that we don't trust. The import-export figures are one of those figures. When we're talking about... There's an example, we'll use books, but you can use clothing, you can use all kinds of things. If an American company is printing books, they don't do it in the United States, most likely. It's pretty rare to do it in the United States. The book may be written here. The intellectual property belongs here. It is sitting in someone's mind and then in somebody's computer. The publishing company edits it, so there's a lot of value that goes into editing and making sure it's working. It's all in the electronic form at this point. And then it is emailed to Mexico or to China. Those are the two big centers of book printing at the moment. What is the value on export There isn't one. It isn't stopped at the border. Nobody measures the value of the intellectual property. However, then it is created in book form, paper. It is a solid lump of paper. It then is brought back into the United States. So what real value left versus value coming in? It looks like we exported zero and imported something of great value. Now we have a negative deficit, when the reality is...
No, no. We don't have a negative deficit.
We have a positive deficit. We have a deficit. We have a negative or a deficit. Yes, no negative deficit, because that would be a positive.
You're going to wind up working for the Commerce Department.
Double negatives going.
Negative deficits.
The double negatives and positive.
That's like saying...
Negative growth.
Right, we had negative growth.
Right. So we get this shipment back. Who owns the books? Americans own the books. An American publishing company owns the book. They bought it at a much lower cost in Mexico, but the wholesale value is what's used for GDP purposes. So we have a deficit. We have a balance of trade deficit that isn't really there. And there's no way around that at this point. When we look at the spike in imports, what we're seeing is a lot of people in the United States, manufacturing and so on, were ordering raw materials and finished parts to create things that they already had orders for.
And we also saw something that's only occurred a couple of times before since we've been measuring such things, and the last time was in 1994. We saw a spike in hiring at the same time as we saw a decline in a quarter in GDP. And in the, it's actually happened a few times before that, more distant history. And every time we have seen that, it is a strong indication that the follow-on quarters, at least three quarters following, tend to be unusually strong, and they make the year come out to look pretty good.
Right.
So the negative GDP numbers, no one is taking them very seriously because they're not confirmed by anything. We've got a break again for commercials, and you are listening to KTEM and the Personal Wealth Coach. And we've got about 2.5 minutes of commercials, and we'll be back on the other side. You're welcome to give us a call at 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
We'll be back. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. We've got about 5 minutes left, or 4 minutes or something like that left in the first hour of the Personal Wealth Coach. We're going to have a second hour. There are a lot of things going on in the economy. Let me, you know, some of the...
You want to summarize?
Well, yeah, boy, interest rates fell in the first half of the year. People didn't expect them to fall.
Right.
There's an awful lot I could go on for hours about why it happened, but it's happened. And one of the things that probably people are becoming a bit blasé, relaxed about, is this fact that we were panicking a few years ago at the idea that the Federal Reserve would taper, and now they're tapering and nobody's concerned about it. And we were panicked a few years ago that once the Federal Reserve taper hit and they started raising interest rates, which could happen as soon as the last part of this year, or certainly by the beginning of next year, that interest rates would go up, bonds would collapse, so people bolted out of bonds, and now they're bolting back into bonds, which is a very interesting concept. Folks, the Federal Reserve has an inflation forecast, an inflation goal of 2%. They want to get 2% inflation rolling. We need that. We're getting really close to 2% inflation. And the initially the Federal Reserve said their goal was to get unemployment down to 6.5%, and then they would stop their extraordinary activities of buying bonds. Well, guess what? It's below 6.5%. I think a lot of people have become very relaxed about the reality of the fact that the Federal Reserve will stop buying bonds at some point this year, and by some point next year will start raising interest rates, and that the economies of the world, and the United States in more particular, are very likely to pick up. And when that happens, interest rates are going to come back closer to a normal rate than we have today. They're abnormal today. We have inflation just under 2% right now in the United States. Year over year, it's 1.8%. If you look at the yield on the 10-year Treasury at about 2.5, there's not enough spread there. The spread between inflation and the 10-year Treasury right now, the 10-year Treasury note should be up around 3%. It's not. It's below that. And I know this sounds like very small numbers, but the point is that don't mistake small, unusual, short-term issues in the market for long-term issues. Utilities are clearly overpriced at this point. People are reaching for yield wherever they can get it. Yeah. That's probably the most dangerous thing out there.
That's I wanted to mention that. Oh, this is a good thing to wrap up this hour with. If you're leaving bonds because of interest rate risks, don't go into utilities. That's just, I mean, you're
and don't go into REITs.
No, you're jumping out of the pan into the fire. All of those things are overpriced.
And
right
don't
now.
Go into master limited partnerships.
We are out of time for this hour. If you would like to contact us off the air, we have voicemail waiting locally at
947-1111.
You can also reach that voicemail toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. We actually have people listening to you and talking to you if you call in during the week. You can also email us at Jeff or Jake at tpwc.com, or you can go to our webpage and listen to podcasts, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com.
KTEM, AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood, the best talk in America. News Radio 1400 KTEM.